Hello and welcome back to another episode of For the Glove of the Game. We took a few weeks hiatus because, believe it or not, there weren't playing any matches during the offseason. Well, I guess they kind of were, but they didn't really matter. Unless your team beat a team that was supposed to be better than you, then they totally matter. Hey, we are so excited to get back into this, and we have a fun one because this is the third episode, and this might be the only episode where we talk to someone who just scored a goal, which we'll get to that in just a minute. But before we go too far, I want to thank our wonderful patrons who got to listen to this early. John Hunt, Frank Anthony, Aaron J., Christopher Cohn, Harry Austin, John Fuller, Michael Fuchs, Joshua Duder, and Noah Telford. And also, if you are interested in becoming a goalkeeper, or you are a Sunday League goalkeeper, like I call myself, I'm more or less just a person who wears gloves because someone has to. Hey, check out Prime Focus Goalkeeping. They do great stuff. Brandon Miller, who was a champion of the USL Championship, he's put together one of the best goalkeeping just coaching courses that you can find in the Carolinas. And also, they put together wonderful resources for you to read stuff online. If some of the stuff that we talk about, you're like, I don't understand that too well, check out some of the articles, check out some of the podcasts. They do a great job of breaking it down for anyone from ages 8 to like 80. So it's really good stuff. Also, the gloves are fantastic. I said this before, I don't catch anything. I parry everything if I'm lucky. I was catching stuff with these gloves. They are absolutely fantastic. Check out PrimeFocusGoalkeeping.com. But look, I'm not going to hold you any longer. We've already kind of hinted at it. I'm being joined by someone who is from Virginia, someone who is from the Lover State, who made his way over to sunny, sunny Southern California and got an all-important goal. I think first goal of your career. Colin Shuttler, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on, Kaylor.
I mean, let's just go ahead from the top. The goal, man, like, how cool.
It was incredible. It was my first as a professional. Not my first in my career. I used to be a striker in high school. We'll get into that probably. But definitely a surreal moment that I could share with my teammates. And we didn't get the 3 points that we wanted in week one, but it was a good turnaround and a lot of things to work forward on.
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk about that, getting into it, because everybody's goalkeeping story is kind of the same, but also kind of different, right? There's some people who their older brother said, get in goal, I'm shooting at you. There's some people who, hey, there was one tournament where the goalkeeper got injured and someone said, hey, you're 6'1", go in there. What was it for you?
So it was back when I was 12, and I was the third string goalkeeper where we just cycled through them, and the other two guys got injured, and so they threw me into the goalkeeping trainings, and I got a little better pretty quickly, and they just kept me in there for the rest of my career.
Yeah, so do you remember the first time you hopped in goal for an actual match?
Oh, no, that's way too young for me to remember.
Fair enough. I mean, you kind of mentioned, you know, playing outfield as, you know, high schoolers and further on. Stuff like that, because there's so many goalkeepers were outfielders before they became goalkeepers. How do you feel like that's helped your game as a professional now?
Especially doing it like towards an age where I can actually remember what I did back then. I loved it because I could see the field from where the outfielders see the field. So when I moved back into goal, I knew what they were seeing, so I can kind of give them information that would help them. Like, I felt like I was putting myself in their shoes so that our communication could be a little bit better.
So you end up doing your youth career where, you know, you did Northern Virginia for a little while you were in college. And then you went to university at Virginia, which if people don't follow the college route very often, Virginia is a real deal powerhouse in collegiate soccer. Getting the offer to go there, you know, what was that moment like for you?
Again, it was surreal. Both of my parents were Virginia alumni. So it was kind of already written for me to go there. I was talking to two different coaches, goalkeeping coaches. The one that was recruiting me eventually went on to a higher job, and thankfully the second one that they brought in still liked me, so it worked out pretty well. And I have a good relationship with the coaches still there. I think Gelnovac has been there for countless of years. And I went and saw him this past off season, and he's still doing well, and the program is still doing well. So it was incredible. Such a long, cultured group there. So, yeah.
I mean, while you were there, you made 45 appearances. You just about, or over half of them were shutouts. You just didn't let anything in. And you were one of the first people in a long time to be first team all ACC, which, again, if you don't follow collegiate soccer, the ACC is ridiculously good. Almost, it feels like almost everybody in the USL and MLS at one point were in the ACC. It's just that kind of conference. For you to be named the cream of the crop out of that, you know, what, it kind of walked through those emotions a little bit.
I feel like I'm going to be saying surreal a lot. It was a dream come true. I mean, getting that achievement, obviously being a goalkeeper, it's a very isolated job, but I don't do it myself. Like it's the defenders in front of me and then midfielders and forwards in front of them. And I think that just as a team, we had a really good game plan to keep teams from breaking us down. And the stats showed that. And thankfully I didn't have to do too much during that career, thankfully, but it was an incredible moment to share with my teammates because they know that they did a lot of that hard work for me.
You know, I mentioned it before, but you did the MPSL route. You did Northern Virginia. And I think for a lot of people, experiencing kind of grown men football, but also there's still young kids there. It's a weird dichotomy of there's young kids, there are people in college, and there are people who are former professionals who are just trying to stay in the game or trying to make it back into the game. That first time that you were able to see that next level and see what the next step could be like as a goalkeeper who is trying to learn the pace of the game and everything, did it feel like it was a step up, about the same? And how important was it for you in your journey as a player?
I feel like it was a change of pace for sure. I mean, obviously from youth to college is a big change because you're playing with guys that are 4 years, sometimes 5 years older than you. So I think that was the bigger jump for me, but playing in the MPSL was even more. I mean, the fourth years, fifth years in college are probably going to be as athletic as those older grown men, but they also don't have that experience. So it was a good learning experience for me as well to be playing in that environment.
You end up getting drafted MLS, and then you end up going to North Texas SC, which for a lot of our League One people, this is still when they were in League One, right? Yeah.
Yes.
And just the talent that was coming through there, I'm not going to go through everybody, but I'm just going to say some of the ones that catch my eye real fast. Richard Sanchez there. I mean, that's a great guy to learn off of. You end up having Derek Waldeck there with you. You have Colin Smith, who's still paving away, got some championship experience. You had a guy named Matthew Corcoran, who's going to be sold for like $1 million in like a couple of months. And this is all after Ricardo Pepi had just left, and there's just more talent on the way. Going into an environment like that, where you are playing against actual grown men in a professional sports, and you're in such a competitive locker room like that, what was your jump from there?
I love all those guys, and working directly with Richard was a really good stepping stone for me as well. We bounced off ideas, and as you know, as a former goalkeeper, like the guy who you're working with shows a lot of what you do in a game. And we'll talk about probably my other teammates that I've been with, but yeah. I learned a lot from Richard. I feel like he learned a lot from me. Obviously, we saw different situations in different games, but we learned from each other. Ricardo was actually there with me. It was right before he left, so that was an awesome player to play with as well. But playing in that environment, like we were right next to the first team, and that was what I was striving for. So just trying to be my best every day, trying to show out what I can do and try to get into that first team training from day to day.
So before we get too far into this, I kind of want to talk about different goalkeeping roles, because you talk about learning off of Richard and stuff like that. Let's talk about your gloves. This is the fun, nerdy stuff that a lot of people are interested in. What brand glove do you wear?
I'm with West Coast Goalkeeping.
West Coast. Now, what size do you wear?
I'm a size 10.
Size 10. Do you like a tight fit, or do you like the just more comfortable fit?
I do like a more tight fit, and we'll go into that's the reason I wear the type of style that I wear. But I'd say more of a tight fit. I like to feel my fingers.
So what style do you like to wear of your glove then?
So actually in practices, I wear the Phantom style that West Coast has. But in the in games, I wear the Aero style, the Aero Gammas to be exact. It's the pink and gray versions.
Is there a Phantom roll finger? Is that what that one is?
Yes. And so, then arrows are negatives.
Okay, wait a minute. You wear you wear different cuts for training in games.
Yes. Well, Phantoms are a type of, they have negative cut to them, but it is a little bit more roll cut on the sides. Okay. So I do like that negative cut where it comes into the sides of my fingers. But yeah, the Aero version that West Coast came out with, I think a little less than a year ago now, when I switched over to them, is a lighter version of the glove, which I really like for games.
So one of the wonderful things that we do on the show is we eventually get into the tactics for a lot of the older people who want to get into it. But a big part of our show is younger kids, because a lot of people want to hear what a professional goalkeeper has to do. And probably the most important tool of the trade are the gloves, right? How do you like to take care of yours?
I wash them probably every 2 days or so. And I also don't use them for more than 2 days in a row. So I have multiple practice gloves that I will wear, and I have one pair of game gloves that I will always wear until, I don't know, probably anywhere from 7 to 10 games, and then I'll switch to a different game glove. And those game gloves do go into either I'll give it to younger fans, or I will wear them in practice as well. So it's not totally Phantoms in practice, but I do mix them up in practice a bit.
So for any parent that maybe didn't play goalkeeper, doesn't know, should you put your goalie gloves into the washer?
That's a great question. I don't know. I do not. I hand wash them. I would say no, just in case, because they are pretty delicate things, and I like to take care, like very good care of them. I even when peeling the latex off the front of them brand new, I am very much a perfectionist. It sometimes takes me an hour to get through both gloves. So I'm very picky about the things. So yeah, I would not put them in the washer personally, but my guess is that some people do.
Yeah, I've always thought the washer one was never too afraid of it, but I have seen people put them into the dryer, which is like the worst thing you could ever do.
Yes. Yes, and definitely that.
for people who don't know, why is that the worst thing you could ever do?
It just dries them out. You'd lose your stickiness probably on the glove.
Yeah. So. Just ridiculous. Yeah. So you've been with West Coast, and being with a brand, obviously there's multiple sides to this, and I'm sure outfielders probably feel the same way with boots and all that kind of stuff. But whenever you decide to be with a brand, there's multiple parts. Obviously there's a financial side to it. You know, is it financial viable for me to keep buying these? Or if you make it far enough into your career, are they giving me enough back to keep wearing it? But also, this is your career. You have to like the gloves that you're wearing compared to other brands that you have worn. And you don't have to call them out by name, but what is different about West Coast that keeps you coming back? Because there's a lot of goalkeepers in the USL that love West Coast.
I think that's the main reason. When I was coming into my professional career, I saw a bunch of American-based goalkeepers wearing West Coast, so I was very intrigued by it. Reached out to them, got a few pair of their gloves, tried them out, and I fell in love. The people there are very nice, very homey, I would say. It keeps me coming back. I don't want to switch at this point. I might, maybe shouldn't say that because they'll know that I want to negotiations, but it's a great brand, and I couldn't say one thing bad about them.
So let's kind of go back into being in the goalkeeping room, because being the young guy, there's a lot that kind of happens here in a goalkeeping room where really goalkeepers are not expected to be in their prime until really late 20s, maybe even early 30s. It's a long-lasting career. I mean, the goalkeeper of the week in the USL, Matt Van Okkel, is 37, right? Like, it is a career that you can keep going. When you join a team and you're at the ripe age of like 22, 23 years old, unless you are clear cut just above everybody else, you're not going to get that playing time immediately. Being GK3 versus GK2 versus GK1, what is your experience in the kind of three different roles?
It's a very good question. I don't think I've ever been GK. Actually, I technically have been GK3. I take that back. I think the biggest thing that you can do, especially mentally, is just understand your role. So when I first came into college, I had never been on the bench once in my youth career. Like, you're just, when you go to the next level, you're used to being that guy, and that's why you get to the next level. And it was very tough for me the first, I would say, couple months even. Just to wrap my head around, like, I very high expectations for myself. I still do everywhere that I go. But once I got wrapped my head around that I need time to develop, and my coaches understand that as well, I was able to learn from practice. This is with Jeff Caldwell, who recently retired from Colorado Springs. He was at UVA with me. I learned so much off of him once I got my head to the learning mentality in everyday practice. So I think that's probably the biggest thing, just understanding your role. And you know that, I mean, you're doing goalkeeping stuff every day. And yes, you want to be playing in games, but if you can learn every day in practice, you're going to get there.
So some we've talked about with Amal Nye and Jake McGuire on previous episodes of this is being GK2, you have to be a good teammate because the goalie locker room is the smallest one. There's usually two to three of you in the locker room. In a lot of cases, just two. And the third one might be an academy kid that comes in every once in a while. And it's not the other goalie's fault that he's playing. He doesn't pick the sheet. He doesn't pick who starts. And if you're being substituted into the game, the worst thing ever just happened, whether it be an injury or a red card. So you have to be a super supportive person. Being the super supportive person that's getting the other goalkeeper ready through film, through quality warm-up, through, you know, good service in the warm-ups. How important is that for a young goalkeeper to learn?
I think it's very important. And I remember a lot of my coaches told me that you won't make it to the next level if you don't learn how to serve it correctly. So that was, even before we went into like shot stopping, that was one of the first things that I learned as a young goalkeeper, because that is what is going to project you to be able to even get into the opportunity of saving shots from other people.
So let's go ahead and talk about your move to Orange County, where you've had, it's been interesting what Orange County has been for you, because you get there and, you know, Patrick Rakowski is there and he has just had one of the most insane playoff runs that the league has ever seen. Just if there's a penalty, he saved it. Every single one of them stood on his head. And then, you know, that year he kind of plays. And then the year after that, you're still kind of GK2, kind of just there. When Cody Cropper retires eventually, and you kind of take over that role. And there's a lot happening between Rakowski and Cropper. Sorry, I always mess up. Cropper, who they have so much experience in this game, so much experience, but also you really want to play.
Yeah. I will say those 2 years were very tough for me mentally. Of course, I wanted to be playing. As I said, I have high standards for myself. I'm very critical of myself as well. So every day in training, I would try to set little goals to beat them at. Of course, it wasn't any like bad competition. I mean, we would create competition for ourselves, and I would always be a supportive member. And Pat and I still talk all the time. He's down in Phoenix still, so we saw him in the preseason. But yeah, I mean, it's the game was not my stage at that point when I first came here, and the practice was. So I treated that as a game environment so that I would try to be better and be ready for when my name was called upon.
You know, you kind of talk about being competitive and all this stuff. One of the things that I think I love about really diving into with the different goalie rooms, especially around the USL, there's a lot of stuff that happens. So at Orange County, if there is one, is it head tennis? Is it two touch? Like, what is the pre-training game that happens?
Oh, pre-training game, we do rondos with the team. So okay. It's not really stat oriented, where we don't count how many times we go in, but we do that with the team. Then we warm up, but it's usually in shooting trainings and whatnot that we will count goals against each other. And of course, every situation is different. So, but yeah, that's mainly the way that we run things there.
So you finally get your chance to be GK1 last year at the professional level. And this year, obviously, you have started off doing the same. Getting that experience, and it is proper grown men at this point. There's only a couple teenagers rolling around. And, you know, we mentioned with Corcoran and others, and one on your team, Bryce Jamison, which, God, he's so good. You know, there's not many. The only teenagers that are playing are ones that are going to be sold for a lot of money. The rest of them are grown men who have been doing this for a long time. Was there a bit of shock factor when you got into that first game?
Are you talking about this year or?
Or last year, like when you finally got your chance to be in, game out, was it like, whoa, this is, once the initial adrenaline wore off of I'm finally playing, was there a moment of trying to find your feet again?
Yeah, so actually my first game for Orange County was 2 years ago, while Pat was still there, and funnily enough, it was against Loudoun United, which is my hometown club. They weren't a team when I was younger and living there, but they're from fully my hometown, so I think that kind of brought a comfortable side to when I was going in. Just seeing a familiar name, familiar like state coming into play us, and kind of brought me back to my roots and just calmed me down for that. But yeah, I felt as comfortable as ever, and of course the nerves were running high. It was my first professional, well, USL championship game, but yes.
So let's go ahead and get into this game film. So for people who are audio only, I'll do my best to describe the situation, but it is a lot better if you go and just watch it. There's not going to be audio. So we're starting off here, opening kickoff. And your first little bit is a cross that goes off the top of the box and they, you know, just kind of kick it high. And I want to look at this. This is one of the most in-depth things I want to look at. Because I think a lot of coaches, young coaches who maybe don't know the goalkeeping position that well, will say that ball touched the 6-yard box. You have to get a palm on it. Why did you not just dive out and just try to parry it away or catch it whenever this cutback comes from Jack Gurr?
Yeah, so my coach and I talk about it all the time, and that's one thing that we talk about is that between myself and the first center back, like, we take care of that 6-yard box area. In that situation, he was pretty close in, And he did well to put it just out of my reach for my instincts to kick in to go for it. But I also saw in my right periphery, I'm always looking to the middle of the box. There was no one right there to tap it in. And I had faith that my second center back at the back post would be in a better position than their striker to kick it out, basically.
Gotcha. Well, this is one of many free kicks, goal kicks coming up next that you go long. I don't think I saw you. Granted, some of the camera stuff, they didn't show everything. Was a little annoyed. But every single one went long. Obviously, this is a game plan. Obviously, we can't get into specifics, but is there a specific thing that you're looking for on these goal kicks? Is it a specific person or is it a specific area of the pitch?
Just in this game, when we're playing away, of course, the away fans are always going to be loud and in our ears. We feel like it's a great way to calm the game down just to go long, especially in the beginning of the game. This is, I think, fourth minute or so. Mm-hmm. It's usually, depending on who the personnel is up top, it'll be to one of them or just into a good part of the pitch, either like central slash, not central, but middle wide, just to give our guys a chance to get up for it.
Cool. This next little action you have ends up, if they'll play, is a nice little pass back to you. You have a little bit of pressure on you, but you play it straight back up the middle where their player was right on your central midfielder's back, but you played it anyway. What did you see here? Because my initial thought when I first saw it was like, oh God, but this same thing kept happening over and over again. So clearly this was planned and this was a good decision. But what did you see on here that let you trust to play it to your center mid?
I'll say that we brought a lot of similar guys back from last year, so that understanding is still there from myself and them. And they always want the ball at their feet, and we want to play short, so we don't always want to kick the ball long. We want to keep the ball. We're that type of team, but we always have an understanding that if they're coming back and I play the ball to their correct foot with a certain amount of speed to them, they're able to just play it out right away. And in this setting, I may be able to play it out wide, but the striker was cutting it off a bit and I trust my center mid. So I put it on his foot, one touch out wide, and then we break both of those lines.
Perfect. This next one, you roll it out and you go long. This one, you may play it over to Bryce Jamison, who we talked about. That one, you didn't play it short. I mean, obviously they were kind of on you, but this is where we talk about your outfield experience just a little bit, because there is a world where especially a lot of young goalkeepers will see that somebody is somewhat on them and just boot it as far as they can right away, but you take the extra second to roll it out. Is that just an experience thing, or was there a little bit more space than we can tell on TV?
I think that has to do with a little bit more of an experience thing, especially just doing it over and over in practice, trying to play out. And I watching it back, I definitely could have easily played my center mid, Sofian, there. And we actually talked about it during the game right after this play, that he was open and can turn with the ball. But I had my eyes set on Bryce, and I saw that he had a bunch of space out wide, so I put it to his outside shoulder, and he was able to keep the ball for us.
Perfect. This next one, I mean, Jack Gurr, a lot of people's MVP from last year, he was putting in a lot of crosses. Sacramento was death by 1,000 crosses, and that's just kind of what they were. He puts in a good cross in, and it deflects off of your player into your hands. One thing, the reason I wanted to really bring this one up was your positioning. Where you are sitting here, and I think there's a lot of players who in this position would have been on their goal line because they're more afraid of conceding the worldie than they are of picking out the cross or being in a place to contest the cross. Why were you where you were?
I think it's just trusting my experience. I mean, I know a lot of players out wide are not going to be looking to do like shoot from there. And even if they do try to shoot from there, I trust my feet that I would be quick enough to get back into that spot. But game plan, we knew Sacramento was just going to bombard us with crosses into the box. So I had to be high off my line to help my center backs with any of those quick runs in behind. And that's the way that I read that situation, I guess. I'm always quick off my line, and I think that's a great quality of mine that I'm able to help my center backs with.
And I can't remember, they don't show us where you play that ball to. I'm not bitter about it. Another Jack Gurr cross comes in, and you have a nice little collision here. And they don't call a foul on it, which I'm a little surprised, because they're usually pretty good about protecting the goalie in the USL, at least I think. But, you know, this is one of the things that they say goalkeepers are crazy. You knew he was coming, you know, to you. You had the choice to punch it away or try to catch. You decide to go for a catch, and it works out. But when you see a guy's coming at you, what is your game plan there?
It depends on the situation, how tall their guy is, how quickly he's coming in. On this one, as you can see from this picture, he is the only guy in the box, and I knew that before that ball is coming in. So I knew if I got between him and the ball, even if he does come and hit me, they have no shot at getting to the second ball. And I think if there is a second player in there, I do decide to punch it. And I also think that the ref would call a foul if we didn't go on to the ball right after this, because I am in my spot and he comes a little bit under me. But it's just being able to read who's in and around you and what the next danger is, basically.
So you're mentioning this a lot. When do you take the chance to look? Because I know a lot of people just get hyper fixated on ball. When do you take the chance to just quickly look?
I'm always looking, for the most part. Anytime like an outfield player, whoever has the ball, if they take a touch and I can tell that their intention is not to play it right away, I will always take a quick look, like center midfield players do, checking their shoulder before they're about to receive a ball.
Is that something you feel like you learned from playing the outfield?
I would say so. I played a little center mid in high school as well. I played the 9 or the 10, so I was quick to know that there was guys on my back. And thankfully, being in goal, I don't have to check completely over my shoulder, so it's an easier, quick little look. But I'd say that's something that I developed from playing out there.
Cool. Well, yeah, that little collision happened. Yeah, I mean, you guys did get immediately on it too, so that does help. Yes. And it does start a quick little counterattack. Next up, you have a goal kick where every single goal kick you took was long. Same kind of thing that you talked about before with just, you know, you're away from home, play it long just to relieve some pressure.
Yeah, for the most part, especially in that first half, I don't think we had much of the ball, especially that feeling of it. So we all decided as a team just to get up, get in a good spot, just to relieve the pressure.
Gotcha. This next one comes in, goes over to Jack Gurr, who plays it one time. You get a palm to it. You get a fantastic save, deflection, and it goes over. There's a lot to break down on this one. Mm-hmm. I think I included the replay, so I don't have to go back. Yeah, so Jack Gurr plays it one time. You get a palm. Now, again, this is where I think a lot of youth coaches will be like, catch it. Don't even let there be a second chance. But this is a hard ball just to even get a touch to. What is your goal? Is it just a parry? Is that your only thought here?
Well, it's also not trying to put it back into the middle. Obviously, it didn't work out in this situation, but I would try to kind of curl my hand around it to try to put it out where, not directly where it came from, because there's a defender or an attacker there, but in that vicinity so that it goes away from the goal.
Gotcha.
Now, it is pretty much of a stretch there, and I did take an extra step out there to be able to cut that out. And it's also whenever you parry something, you got to be up quick off your feet. Did that well there.
You did here.
Yes.
So you immediately get up, and you just put the body in the way. Where did it hit you?
I think around either like my upper thigh or lower chest area.
Okay. Because like when I first saw it, I definitely thought you Scott Sterlinged it.
No. Thankfully, it was not off the face. No.
Okay. So you just kind of get big here. teaching young goalkeepers just to get big. I feel like that's a large part of it, because a lot of it's like, I just want to dive at the ball and not just make yourself as big as possible. Just how much training goes into just react, get it big?
I think a lot of it, and there's a good amount of training, and there's different parts of it. I mean, of course, you want to train that technical side so you know how to, like, what kind of shape you get into to cover up most of the goal. And I don't show that here. And I think I did what I did because I was so close to the ball. So I knew I could kind of, I kind of bring my arms in a little bit just to make sure that the rebound doesn't go too far. Cause I knew we had a lot of defenders in there. Of course it goes to another attacker, so it didn't work in that situation. But another part of it is just learning to be brave and not being scared of being hit with that ball. So there are a couple different things that you do need to train for that.
And you get up and you're celebrating, which I always love when the goalie celebrates. I'm one of the people that seeing the goalkeeper just get up and act like nothing happened, I'm like, come on, dude. No, like, give me a little something. I love that you got up and just were just pumped up. Next, it's a offside call goes y'all's way, and you're telling them all just to get up. Like you mentioned, you guys didn't have a lot of the ball, and this is put into a good area. The second ball comes down, and it was a good chance for you guys. Didn't fall quite the right way, but was what it was.
Yeah.
Now, here's one thing that I find very interesting coming up, which is the wall. You have a free kick right outside the box from a decent shooting angle. I have this conversation with a lot of young goalkeepers and just professional goalkeepers too. When do you decide when to go from 4 to 3? Because there is a massive visual. You lose sight of the ball very easily. When do you decide that you are going to put in the extra body and just accept that you're not going to see as much of the ball?
That's a great question. And I don't think there's a correct answer to be frank with it, but I would say, like, it's all about feeling, but in this situation, I saw that my wall was going to be inside my box. I knew it was very close. So I just put an extra guy there and I knew that I'd be able to make a way to see the ball. And we do video on where they take their free kicks and where they like to shoot and whatnot. So I was already had that in the back of my mind as well. But I don't think there's a correct answer. It's just feeling for different goalkeepers. And since my wall was inside my box, I went with the 4 in this one.
I know that you said you watch a lot of film. Is there a general placement that you like to go for? I know some goalkeepers want, if there are, you know, three to four people, they want the second body on the far or near post, whichever one it is, whichever one you're setting up. And some people want just the last person of the wall to be lined up with that post. Is there a general rule of thumb that you go with, or does it truly depend on each team?
It does depend. It also depends what kickers they have on the ball. So in this situation, I remember Sack didn't put a left footer on the ball. So I was actually able to last second bring my wall like half a step to the left a little bit, so I didn't have to worry about the curl around the near post. And I think that's might make a big difference whether you save it or not, and whether this ball goes straight to a player's head or right in between two players' heads. So I definitely wouldn't put the last player on the post just because there is an extra danger of going around the near post. But maybe not all the way to middle of the second guy. So
this one does work out where it goes straight into the forehead of your wall, which it doesn't get talked about a lot, but you gave a smile on it. Is there a better feeling? Obviously, well, scoring a goal or saving something, we'll talk about that. But is there a better feeling than setting up a perfect wall?
Scoring a goal.
Yeah, well, there is one.
Saving a PK? No, it's honestly a great feeling, and I was very happy because they're always adamant when they get a big block as well, like my defenders and whatnot. So I'm always a loud voice behind them, saying that as well.
So another long goal kick that ends up going out. It's very similar to the last one where it goes, just kind of flick it on. You get a nice little pass back to you. And last time you played it straight up the middle, but this time you decide to play it straight back to your left center back. Was this just, this is the guy that's open, or what, was there something that you were seeing in this one?
Yeah, their striker kind of came in inside their their left side of the field was pushed up, and their striker came a little bit too far central, probably because he knew I was looking down the middle to get it around him. So he kind of just left our left side open a little bit more, so I knew he would have space with it.
Perfect. And if this could play, that'd be fantastic. High quality production going on right now. Let's see. Now, this is really the first attack down the left-hand side. There was not much that happened outside this, and it's a good cross into the middle, good header, goes past you. I want to break down your side of this to talk about what could have been done, because I think a lot of people will say a point-blank header with really good pace, there's nothing you can do, but I think every goalkeeper will tell you there is something I could have done. So from here, let's I want to wait till we can see this angle. Is there some positioning that you feel like you could improve? Is it maybe a technical footwork thing? Like what maybe went wrong on this?
On my side of things, I don't know. It is a tough one, especially when it's the near post. If anything, I'll talk about this more, especially with my header. I head it down, and I know that strikers are told to head it down, so I kind of go down a little bit more when it comes to a player's head, just because I think that's where they're going to go, and I'll have the best chance of saving it. In this situation, if I stayed up, I think I might get a touch on it with my shoulder. He does well. It goes like right between my shoulder and my head. But if I'm just a little bit more upright, maybe it does somehow hit me in that spot.
In the end, it is a near perfect cross with a near perfect header. There really is not much you can do. This is, you know, the first goal of your guys' season, official season, and it doesn't go your way. How do you pick yourself back up from that?
Just knowing that the quality that we have on the field is good enough to stay in the game. And I always have that feeling that we went behind a couple times last year and we came back and won some of those games. So I know that we have the quality to pick it back up. And thankfully we were able to do that in this game as well.
Next moment for you is a bit of a heart and throat moment where it was a slight miscommunication between you and center back, or, you know, just maybe not a perfect header back where your center back heads back the ball. It goes a little bit wide, looks dangerous. Were you calling for it to be headed back, or, you know, was it just clear this danger, we'll deal with what happens next?
I think it was mainly just clear the danger. In that situation, I wouldn't, it wasn't like 100% his ball to win, so I wouldn't be calling for it in that moment, but he knows anywhere in and around the box, I will be able to go and pick it up. So I was playing the cross originally to where the striker would win that ball, so I'm in the middle of my goal and tracking the ball to the back post, but thankfully he was able to win it, and I'm able to quickly get over there, and we can keep possession at that point.
Gotcha. And I don't remember if we see where you play this one. Maybe they show us. Yeah. You roll it across and it comes straight back to you. From here, you guys are really getting sucked into the press, and it ends up working out in Sacramento's favor. The press works. But when you see that the press is coming in, is there, like we talked about earlier, relieve the pressure, go long? And when do you choose, hey, maybe my center back or maybe my fullback can do something with this that maybe I can't?
I think it's more just reading the game. We don't have a specific thing, and I think that just comes with experience. So I don't know if I'll be able to help in that sense of things. But in that situation, I was hoping for a center mid coming a little bit quicker to me to play, and then we play out our right side because that's where the pressure was coming from. Right. That's why usually we'll roll it out to bring in pressure and then to eventually break it. But I felt like it was a little too close, and we have certain tactics set in to like safety valves to do. And I think we did that well, just maybe a little bit slow understanding that on the second part of things. But I feel like Sac did well there, and you can tell we're in week one still, not fully understanding movements. So
for sure. Let's see. Next one, ball comes over to you, bounces straight to your feet, and you play it straight back up the middle like you did before, obviously executing a game plan there. I think you get the ball back one more time, but I kind of want to just talk about the original thing. I think a lot of people will see the ball come over to them and just pick it up with their hands and then just roll it out somewhere as opposed to keeping it at your feet. Is there just kind of a vibe that you get of knowing which one you want to do? And if, and whatever the answer is, you decide, hey, go back to the game plan up the middle, despite having a couple of other options, when do you choose the play what you see versus we have a game plan that can work right now?
Our coach, and I think our players are a firm believer, like he gives us great ideas, but like in a game situation, the players are the ones that make those decisions, and he prepares us really well. But you need those players to make those game time decisions. And I think that we have good talented players to be able to make those. So in this situation, usually when I play a ball up the middle, it's usually to bring pressure back into that, but it's a pass that I have intended to go to a second spot before I give him that pass. So I always make sure that he has an option before I give him that pass. And that's usually to go to one of the sides, and I'll usually point to one of those sides for him because he's facing me. But yeah, that's usually to bring back pressure, break it again, and then we'll have more space on the ball after.
Gotcha. You get another ball back to you. Eamon is on you. He is really closing in, and you play a really nice ball over to your right back. Just again, we talk about experience. You were cool under pressure. Would first year professional, Colin Shuttler, would he have handled that pressure the same way that you did then?
Mentally, probably not. I think I'm definitely calmer on the ball, but I do love the ball at my feet, and I always tell my teammates that, like, if you're in any type of pressure, just give it to me, and I'll help you deal with it. So I think that's something that I always strive to help my teammates with, and that's why we always try to mostly play out of everything, obviously within certain tactics.
Gotcha. Well, you get another ball that's headed back to you kind of in a dangerous area, and you immediately switch the point of attack. You mentioned being aggressive. We're going to kind of start rolling through a lot of these, but you mentioned being an aggressive keeper who likes to come out for things. You know, this just seemed like another one of those situations where the ball's headed back. You kind of have to be a little bit brave. You can't second guess yourself, and you immediately switch the point of attack. Is there anything that you saw on this that helped you read it a little bit faster?
So this one, I actually am calling the ball back, and I think it just hits the wrong side of his head, just plays it a little bit closer to the attacker, which actually works out for us because it brings him out of position for me to be able to switch the point of attack. And we always want to play quick when they're out of position. And, that was the reading of the game there.
Gotcha. Well, we get a corner on the other side, where you guys score the goal and two corners in the game. I just wanted to include it in because this is the one corner that you weren't involved in. So that's just fun. Let's see. You get another ball, comes back to you, ball at your feet, nice and simple, back up to the person where it came from. Simple.
Yep.
This is the second half now, and Jack Gurr has the ball, death by 1,000 crosses. This ball goes up, and you keep it in. Now, I think it's clear that you kept it in, but there was a little bit of talk about it. Did you hold it over the line? Were you good?
Yeah. I was good. And I always go for those balls because if we can prevent a corner, it's always in the best interest of the whole team. So Yeah, I of course you can see my feet are out, but the ball is 2 yards or like 2 or 3 feet away from my body. So I think it was easily within the field of play the whole time.
Gotcha. And from here, let's see what you do. Because I don't remember. I feel like you roll it out, but
Yes, roll it short. Look for
okay.
options, try to get our guys into positions, but then play short.
Obviously, the thing you're told is switch point of attack, but when the point of attack, whenever the ball takes you almost out of bounds, you kind of just have to regroup. Is that what you're kind of waiting there is for everybody just to kind of get into their shape and to move forward?
Yeah, I'll move around my box a little bit just to see if I can move any of the opposing players, but it's usually to let my guys get into good positions to see that if we can play out of certain situations.
Perfect. This ball comes back to you and Amon's right back at you, but again, your center mid is there. And I think if we look closely on this one, I think we can actually see you pointing to where you want to go. So that's always a fun thing to be able to see that happening in real time. And yeah, it works out well. You guys end up breaking out of it. I think this one, I'm trying to remember. This one's funny. There's one of these where you and your right center back or right back just kind of play a personal game between you two. So you play a really nice ball under pressure and gets back to his feet. Actually, no, it's not this one. But yeah, you were under a lot of pressure and you play a nice ball. Just, I guess, a lot of that passing experience from Rondos and playing outfield.
Yes. That one was a long ball over the top. He was trying to head it back to me. Didn't get enough on it for it to get in the box at least. But I would put myself behind the ball in any situation just to be calm and be able to play around him.
Gotcha. We get another one through the box. And I'm gonna be honest with you, Colin. The first save that you had was impressive. I think this is a more impressive save than the one you had in the first half. They look so simple. The ball slightly to your side, you get your body over it. I want to look at this because it looks easy, but it's so not. Kind of break down what you did on this play.
And also what you can't see, that's a great pause that you have there. What you can't see from the film is actually this ball is deflected. It's going to my left side at first. And it eventually comes to my right side, which is why it looks like it's an unconventional save. I would probably usually just dive to my right side, but I had to keep my balance and just get my body behind the ball just to keep it out. But in these situations where it's central and they can go either way, it's very important not to guess. Just kind of have the confidence in yourself that you're quick enough to save it either way, and just stay up straight, keep your balance, and get your body behind that ball.
I'm gonna see if maybe we can see it on here because I mean, yeah, I can see your body move and just getting the ball over to your right and getting strong palms behind it. One thing we haven't talked a lot about on the show was strong palms, strong wrists, keeping that ball firm behind you. What do you do in training to really make sure that you can have strong palms that don't let that just kind of squeak behind you in for a goal?
That's a great question. I probably don't do a ton of trainings on it anymore. I kind of just rely on my experience with it. But I used to do when I was younger, I used to do go through full trainings, not like full on game shot stops or anything, but go through trainings without wearing gloves at all. So you work on that finger strength, wrist strength, getting a good like texture on that ball, so you actually learn the right techniques and everything. And I think that's something that's helped me this far down the road as well.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean it. The moment I saw it, I was like, "This is that." That's just an impressive save all around. Just keeping it close to the body. It's a little bit off centered. I know it doesn't get the love the first one would have gotten, but that is just such a good just tech. What looks like a textbook save that just wasn't just good stuff. Let's see if it'll play. Yeah, this one comes all the way back to you and.
This is the one you were talking about before.
Yeah. So your right center back gets it. He plays it back to you. You had the ball at your feet, and the guy isn't pressing. So you play it back to him. and he's starting to get a little bit of pressure, and so he just plays it back to you. It just looks ridiculous on TV when you're watching it, but you can see why it's happened, because there's no pressure on him, so you play it to him. You've told him before, just play it to me, I got you. And it just kind of happened over and over again. Was there anything else in the field that you were looking for, or was it just, I can just play it simple?
And you can actually see after both of us, right after we play the ball, we move right away to make sure that we're an option again. But in this situation, as any soccer player will know, you have to move the ball to move the opponent. And that's kind of what we're trying to do there. We're trying to move them out of their positions to possibly play out of these situations, but they do a good job of keeping their structure. And eventually I go for a ball to break lines and a play where I thought there should have been a foul, where my striker was undercut, but we didn't get it, unfortunately. So
I don't understand how that's not a foul, but hey, fine. Let's see. Next ball through, it's a fancy footwork, but ends up at your feet, and you take a touch to just play a simple one back over to right back. Simple play. Let's see. Next one, this one comes back to you and just lay it off back where it came from. No big deal on that one. Here, I want to talk about what you do on corners, not the ones that you score from, which, yeah, we'll do that. But what is your approach? Because obviously in-swinger, out-swinger, you have a lot of different options. But how far generally do you like to be off of your line? Is there where do you like to have your defenders? And when do you decide to punch versus catch?
Yeah, I think that in-swinger versus out-swinger kind of just determines where my zonal players are standing, whether it's one step in or one step out because of where the ball will eventually land. But for the most part, I like being right in between the goal line and the six-yard box. Okay. A little bit aggressive, of course, that opens the door for an Olympico potentially. But again, I will take my quick feet against a shot from 30 yards away. So I like to be aggressive off my line, and that's always something that I'm working with, reading crosses and being aggressive to help my center backs out, because of course my reach with my arm is going to be a lot more than any player with their head. And I think I did pretty well in this game to help out with the two corners against.
So you get it and you punch it square away. Why did you punch here?
It was a little bit over my head. So I was moving backwards a bit. It was towards the back post instead of the center. So maybe a little bit, not off balance, but just not completely balanced to be fully comfortable with catching it. And there were a good amount of players in and around that area, so wanted to be safe with it.
Gotcha. Let's see what happens after this, because I don't fully remember. I guess there's another cross in.
Or they get another cross and a volley on the back post after a deflection.
Gotcha. Yep. And then you get a goal kick. We've been over this song and dance. We know what kind of happens here. Don't really have to talk about it. I'll let the video play a little bit. You get another ball back to you and right up the middle once again, and it comes right back to you in sort of a dangerous area, but you play a great ball through. What were you telling him? Because you've said that you're pointing to where you want to go. I don't think you're pointing at yourself here.
I was not. No. No, in practice, I'll always move around a defender, and I'm already moving to where the ball, I think the ball will go. I thought he would play it out to the other center back, but he played it for me to run onto, and thankfully, I was quick enough to change my point of run and get onto that ball, and I actually played the outside of my right foot into the center mid here off the second ball. But and again, it just comes with the comfortableness of the understanding between us as teammates and myself being on the ball.
Yeah, well, next one, simple play back to you. And once again, personal game between you two. It happened a few times. And high and long, that's the way this one worked out, like a lot of those kind of set plays. This one ends up coming over to you. You read the field again up to the middle, go over to the right. I saw the point there, so that was fun. Another one, play it up through the middle, a little bit more space. That one he tries to run onto as opposed to playing it over. Was there something that may have been said, or was it just a slight miscue?
I think he was he actually runs over the ball. I think he was trying to dummy and fake out the defender. It didn't work in that situation. But that was a decision that he made as a player, and sometimes they don't pull off as we would like to. But as he knows, his understanding of our back line will always back him up any type of miscue that we have. So
we really have just two more things to work on, to kind of work through. And I just want to let the first part of this play where Eamon is on the ball and takes a shot, beats you at the near post. And I want to just talk about it now. And being beat at the quote-unquote near post, never get beat at the near post. I want to give you the avenue of talk about why that is just such a dumb thing that keeps getting repeated over and over again. Obviously, you want to save this, but why is the don't get beat at the near post such a just not an achievable thing?
I think there's just so many variables that you have to worry about. And in this situation, I have in my head to protect that 6-yard box, that ball across. I knew there was a second guy. You won't be able to see it on the film, but there was a guy that was running in at that back post that I was thinking about as well. So I'm not fully directed on my near post, mm-hmm. but you can kind of see it. I guess he isn't as close as I thought he was, but just protecting the whole goal. And I know some keeper coaches will say stand on your near post because if it goes back post, it's not your fault. But I also want to keep out as much as I can. And I think I'm in a good spot here. Maybe I can be a step out more, maybe a little bit upright more. Might be a little bit too low. And I was very mad at myself in the run of play after being scored on the near post. But I watched it back, and I will say it was an incredible finish by Trevor, but there's always something that I can do. And in another situation, I feel like I saved that. So
it's an unreal finish.
Yeah.
So the one thing is, and it's the whole thing, like you said, some keeper coaches will tell you to stand on the post, and if it goes in, it's not your fault. But also the point of goalkeeping is to keep the goal. Why risk the 5% shot when a lot of times he's going to cut the ball across and you're handling that one? If your goal is only the near post, why just stand there and leave 90% of it open? That doesn't feel like a good idea either.
Exactly. So there's always pros and cons with any type of situation and positioning that you're thinking of in any game situation. So it's, I always try to, as I said before, with having a high line on crosses and even the run of play, I open that risk factor for an unreal play from another player. And unfortunately it happened in one of these. So.
Yeah. And just going to kind of look at it just one more time. I mean, yeah, it is just a good finish. I mean, the amount of power he gets on it from being closed down, I mean, it's just ridiculous. But you immediately get another ball back to you, and you have to have confidence in yourself and you play it back. You know, there is no hanging your head. You're trying to get back into the game, but short, simple passes to work yourself back into it. I guess something I want to ask you about real quick before we get to the fun part at the end. When you can see the goal, how much is there of just wanting to be involved in the game again? You know, whether it be get the ball at my feet or get the next easy save out of the way, how much of a drive is there just to be involved again, just to build yourself back up, I guess?
I mean, there's always a drive, and I feel like a younger part of me, if I got one of those balls, I would have tried to play an unreal ball in behind the back line, like a 5%er that would happen. But I think just being smart and just getting yourself back into play. Of course, we can't choose when we're going to have the opportunity to save the next shot. Sure. So I've kind of put that out of my head, and just being there for the team and encouraging and just being loud for them back there. I think that's the best way to get yourself back into it.
Here's another one that's headed back to you. I'm assuming you called for it.
Yep.
And roll it out through the middle and try to create something. This is a throw-in that comes to you. Don't see the throw-in to the keeper that often. It's always fun to see. But play it right back to the guy who threw it to you and go from there. There's another little opportunity here. It's a foul, and then you get a card here. I don't want to do anything to get you in trouble, but in real time, it does look like you you decide to really put the whole weight into it. But you know, it is what it is. Just through this moment of being obviously upset over what could be a little bit of playing it up, trying to level your head because there's still 3 minutes to go. Is that why you're just kind of walking away, is just to kind of calm yourself down? Or
no, I walked away to put the ball down because it was our free kick. So the ref blew the whistle and the guy took another touch, and I was there and my foot's out to get the ball, and I knew, I kind of figured he was going to kick it away. So I kind of left my leg out there for him to trip over intentionally. I honestly don't think it's a yellow card. There's players that do that all the time. He,
yeah,
made a bit of a meal out of it, in my opinion. Of course, I'm biased, but I mean, that's the way of the game. You see it everywhere. You try to get the ref into things. He's trying to kill the game. They're up by one goal. So, I was just trying to get the ball quickly, get it back into play. I said my stuff to the ref and trying to get the game back rolling, and I knew he wasn't going to change his decision, so I just walked off and was just waiting for the guy to get up and get the ball back in play.
Gotcha. Well, here we are. We're getting over to the corner kick, and I'm going to let it play at first, but just one of the best moments. I think this is the first USL Championship goalie goal we've had since Joe Kosminski 2 years ago. First one in Orange County SC history, which it's a nice little history to be a part of. And you find yourself in the middle of the box and, you know, fox in the box, it goes into the back of the net. Just walk us through the moment, man.
Yeah, when that ball went out of play, my head quickly swiveled over to my coach to see what he was thinking. Of course, I can run up myself, but I don't want to take that risk without the approval. So I looked over, he was like, go ahead. And I got to the top of the box and I looked over again just to double check, because I was second guessing myself, and he's like, just go for it. So I kind of wait there, make sure no one picks me up as a man marker, and then I think my anger of just not wanting to lose got a hold of me, and just the training of seeing crosses as a goalkeeper, the timing of it, and also just being a striker back in the day, the timing of headers and learning how to head the ball, thankfully, just came into play here. And it's just a one in a million chance, and thankfully I was a part of it.
I gotta know, when the ball was in the air, at what point did, in your head or out loud, did you even say, oh my god, it's happening?
I saw the ball and I kind of like moved my head. I honestly don't even remember the feeling of the ball hitting my head. I know it did, but it was just unreal. I was looked up, saw the ball hit the net, and I just wide-eyed, didn't know what to do. And thankfully my defender tackled me, because I have no clue what type of celebration I would have done otherwise.
I mean, I've always felt like that's something that happens a lot of times. You hear, I know for me, I've always heard the goalkeepers be like, oh, if I score, you know, I'm taking the shirt off, I'm running around, I'm doing the whole thing. There's no way.
No, that would have never crossed my mind. And of course, being on a yellow card already from 2 minutes before, I wouldn't have been able to take off my shirt. So yeah. Thankfully, he didn't give me the chance to have that decision made.
You did what I think might be the hardest thing to do after scoring a goal as a goalkeeper, which is weirdly enough having to play goalkeeper again. We're about to see the clip come up, but you are looking around, you're looking up, you're praising, you're doing the whole thing. you are just like it. You can tell that you just had an adrenaline dump. How are you a hyping yourself back up, but also not letting yourself be so overwhelmed by the moment that you make a stupid mistake?
Yeah, I mean, you can't see it, but my heart is absolutely racing in this moment. I don't know what to think. I'm trying to calm myself down a little bit, saying, okay, there's a couple minutes left. Need to be loud and vocal again to make sure we're in the right structure and God forbid us getting scored on again. So just talking to myself, talking to my players, which also calms me down as well.
So we are 3 minutes over the added time, the minimum added time, and you get a ball and you are not playing it short through the middle. It is high and as far as it'll go.
Yes. Yeah. Just playing it up, just wasting as much time as possible. Most likely. I mean, just having our guys get back into the structure. We don't even have the mindset to try to play out from this point.
And ball goes back and it's full time whistle and everybody is just sprinting to you and you are just there. What full-time whistle goes, obviously you want the 3 points, but where are you at mentally at this point?
Relieved, honestly. Of course, a win is the best case scenario, but not losing is a way the projected number one team. Of course, we think that we can compete against them any day of the week, but just coming out of that game where we felt like we were second best to most of the plays, coming out with a point is huge to start the season.
You know, we talk about the season and I don't want to say week one means nothing because it does mean something, but there are 33 more games to go. There's a lot of game to go. If you are going to talk to Orange County fans who do love to listen to the USL show, you know, what's kind of the message to them going forward?
We have a lot of things to work on. I know we ended the season really high last year, and we have a lot of similar players coming back and still some new faces that we're still trying to get the understanding of playing together, but there's a lot to build off of in this game, and we didn't show the probably the talent that we have to offer yet, but as you said, it's a long season. It's 9-10 months, and we're gonna peak at the right time, I believe.
And to any of the young goalkeepers who are just beginning high school, college, or even early professional ranks, what's something that you kind of wish you knew as a young player, whether it be professional or just starting out, that you know now?
I think, especially when I was younger, what I worked on the most was just trying to be mentally there in training. And I know it's still tough to try to like get yourself up for a training, but that's where you're going to spend most of your time. I think 5% of the time you're going to spend in games. So if you can get yourself up for those trainings and learn as much as you can, you're going to be as much prepared as you can be in those game situations.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Colin. It was always fun. I went to go check out the Y Scout and seeing the little ball beside your name, you know, one appearance, one goal, always fun to see, and getting a point, always fun to see out of you guys. And thank you to everybody who tuned in to watch. We really appreciate you for the first one of the 2024 regular season. Thank you so much for following along, and thank you for following For the Glove of the Game. We will see you hopefully in the next week or two with some other out of this world performance. So we'll find out who that is because we don't even know yet. Thank you so much. And thanks again, Colin.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching another episode of the USL Show.
The USL Show is now proudly part of the Protagonist podcast family. Please go to protagonistsoccer.com to check out more work. Thanks for stopping by, and we'll see everyone again next time.